medical school is not for the faint-hearted. 12 to 14 years of grueling hours and studies after high school. So what could have motivated two doctors in their prime to abandon this most noble of professions and drastically change course? It was a higher calling, beer making, that changed the lives of Dr. Quinn and David Rathkamp, internal medicine specialist and paediatrician respectively. It was not just the challenge of creating heavenly brews, but also the opportunity to give all the profits to three charities: Food for the Hungry, the Meals on Wheels Association of America, and Highland Lakes Habitat for Humanity. Why did you choose these three charities?
Deirdre, we chose these three charities because we've had a lot of experience with them. We chose Food for the Hungry as our international charity. We've been donating to them regularly for many years, and we know they do great help around the world. We chose Meals on Wheels because we volunteered with Meals on Wheels in the past in delivering meals. We originally wanted to go with Meals on Wheels National as our national charity. However, we saw that they did a lot of advocacy work also, and not so much directly delivering meals to the seniors. So that's why we actually went with Meals and Wheels and more the greater Austin area Meals and Wheels. And then finally, we chose the Highland Lakes Habitat for Humanity chapter because we've done a lot of volunteering with Habitat for Humanity, and we wanted to have a very local charity that was right there in the Highland Lakes area.
David, you met in residency, right?
Yes.
You married, then you went into private practice, and so what happened?
Well, we kind of started off the normal way, doing our what we'd been trained to do, practicing medicine. But around that time, my brother-in-law had his first child and was no longer able to homebrew anymore. And he was living in St. Louis and asked me if I wanted his equipment. I said, sure. So he packed it all up and sent it to me, and I started homebrewing and really fell in love with it, enjoyed it, and just got very passionate about it, and met other like-minded individuals who also enjoyed homebrewing. And you always kind of dream about what you could do if you could do anything. And I always thought, you know, this would be it, would be brewing beer. And it kind of came all to a head when a men's pastor at our church was talking about pursuing your passion, and everybody's made, God made you for some reason. And it's these things that you do where you kind of get lost in the moment, and you forget about eating, you forget about the time, you just get lost in doing it. And that's what your passion is, where your passion meets the world's greatest need is your mission. And I thought, you know, mine is making beer. And he kind of looked at me and was like, all right, God can use it. And I'm like, all right, let's go for it. So came home, talked to Quinn, who, of course, is a very supportive and loving wife. And she said, okay, let's see how we can make this work.
So. Now, Quinn, I imagine it must have been quite a shock for you anyway when David came in and made this announcement. Was it or was it not?
Well, I think the part about it being his passion was not the shocker. However, doing something with it as our lifelong pursuit was a little bit of a shocker as to, like, oh, how is that going to happen? But since I always thought that I would retire from medicine and go work with a charity organization, we immediately put the two together and came up with a charitable brewery idea. And it's not a totally novel idea. In Belgium, they've had the Trappist monasteries brewing and selling beer for quite some time now, and they make great beer. And that's actually how we got drawn into loving beer in the first place.
You give away your profits, right? Is that still possible to maintain a healthy business, giving away the profits?
I certainly hope so, yes. I think that you can pay everyone within your company a living wage and hopefully net profit on top of that you give away to charities versus giving it to investors. Now, certainly part of operating expenses would be responsibly putting away for growth also, because we do have plans for expansion, and when you're trying to save the world, there's no limit to that. So yes, I entirely anticipate that it is a healthy business model.
David, you've got a small staff there, right?
Oh, yes.
So tell me about them.
Yeah, we got a really great staff. They work really hard. Really appreciate them. We got Alex, who's our lead brewer. He came all the way from the Northeast. He was actually involved in helping run a philanthropic coffee company up there. So he's just brewing something different down here now. And he's been a tremendous help. We also have Corey, one of our great sales guys in the Austin area, very hip guy who's always, keeping us in touch with kind of the culinary cuisine and what the coolest restaurants and where we need to be and everything, which is really great help. We also got William, who's a really go-getter. He's always making deals with this and doing tap takeovers and all the bars and stuff. So, and then we got our latest guy, Casey, who's he helps deliver our beer everywhere. He also helps keep the brewery running. He helps out with the bottling line and keeping things all maintained. So we got really really great staff. Even though we're small staff, we're pretty close knit. We help each other out and. Yeah, really proud of the guys.
All those beers that you make have Latin names. Is there a reason for that?
Yeah.
Other than maybe you understand Latin.
Yes, I've actually gotten, I think I was actually a Latin teacher here in San Antonio just emailed me and said that I was using it improperly. So apparently Google Translate doesn't help out as much as I hoped it would. And my, last time I took a Latin course was back in college, so I must have forgotten some of the words. But anyways, yes, one of the reasons we chose that is a lot of times there is conflict with choosing a name of a beer, then somebody else might also have that name also, and you don't want to run into any conflict. So we thought, who's crazy enough to use Latin for names of beers? So we did that. Also, it helps to kind of have people search a little bit deeper why we named it this. They might see this Latin name like, well, what does that mean? And kind of look into it a little bit deeper and figure out why we named it these Latin names. So, yeah.
So are you going to correct any labels?
I hope not. That's a very expensive proposition.
Yes, we will. It kind of helps people to kind of try and find my errors.
Quinn, you left a very busy pediatric practice to become the business manager and, I might add, the general dog's body around that place. So what exactly is your role at Save the World Brewing Company?
Well, officially, my title is CEO. However, I will tell you, I do everything from sweeping and mopping the floors to answering the phones to deliveries. I see it primarily as keeping us afloat in the business sense of things. I do all of our bookkeeping and a lot of our PR. I reach out to people. I handle all the new products that we're going to be introducing into the market. And I am also the person who would communicate with new vendors that we take on. So just a general.
Now, Save the World Brewing Company is a very lofty name for a brewery. So who chose it and why?
Was that me?
I think so.
Yes. If you're going to dream big. So what better way to try and spend your life but by saving the world and doing it one beer at a time? It's a great way to do it. So it's a memorable name, and it also prompts people to ask about why that name. So you can start, starting conversations that way. So it's
sure.
A really great thing.
Now, I know that you're both committed Christians, and I assume that your business model is affected by your beliefs. Is that the reason why you give away the profits? And
yes, definitely. We had gotten to the point where we realized that we didn't need to live in wealth and excess, and we didn't need to acquire things necessarily anymore. So that's why we were in a mode of, let's give it all away. We came into this world with nothing, and we can't leave this world with anything. So we might as well do our part in being a blessing to the community and everyone around us.
Quinn, you've got an interesting background. You're from Vietnam.
Yes.
Just briefly tell me about your background.
Oh, sure. My family actually made it out with the boat people in 1975. When we immigrated to the United States, and We were really so fortunate to have been sponsored by the First Presbyterian Church of Texarkana, Arkansas. And so they took us under their wing, and that's where I grew up for the first 10 years of my life in a small town of Texarkana within the loving church community of that First Presbyterian Church. And since then, my parents have moved us around in the United States to other communities where they really wanted to promote our education.
And David,
yes.
Yours is not quite such an exotic background.
No, it's not, but it's a great background. Yeah, I grew up here in San Antonio, born right here at Santa Rosa Medical Center, and went to Roosevelt High School, and so, yeah, and then off to UT, and so, yes, I've pretty much been a Texas boy my whole life, so. But it's interesting, a lot of the brewers around here are from San Antonio. The head brewer at Real Ale actually went to the same high school with me. We were in the same class, so that was kind of cool. Then you're right, Jason from Freetail, also a grad here in San Antonio. So it's kind of fun because we're friends and we see each other and we're brewing beer. And so it's a real group of us. So,
I wonder what kind of chemistry classes took place at Roosevelt High School.
They're good.
So do you, too, intend to continue to present CMEs or continuing medical education exams, or are your futures firmly in the hands of God?
Mine are firmly in the hands of God because my medical license officially expired at the end of last year, and I didn't renew it. So, yes, I'm all in.
Oh, the answer is always that our present and our future is always in the hands of God. That being said, I love being a doctor, and I think I would want to continue volunteering and doing mission trips. So I don't really want that to lapse at this time. I really don't anticipate that I will return to practicing medicine as a business. But I think I would love to continue to volunteer.
And maintain your license.
Yes, ma'am.
Of course. So tell me, what's the favorite beer of most consumers? I know you've got a wide range,
yes.
And they are truly delicious.
Why, thank you.
Thank you, Deirdre.
It's very interesting because we get our sales reports on a weekly basis, and they're very close. They are, within cases of each other. So it's really, it speaks well to the variety of beer that we've selected to put out there. So really, they pretty much sell across the board very evenly. But it also depends on the weather. So the summertime, but probably our leader during the summertime, and even to now, is Agnus Dei, our wit beer. It's just a delicious beer and it's very approachable. Mm-hmm. So it's a very easy to drink beer, a lot of complexity, a lot of flavors. It's brewed with wheat along with orange peel and coriander. So it's just a very delicious beer. And even people that say that they don't like beer have a hard time saying no, they don't like that one. So.
And for you personally, what do you like?
Oh, I like them all. They're like my children, so I can't select them. So, but at times, I like one more than the other. It's been funny. I think this week has been pretty much Fructum Bonum, our Saison. I've really been enjoying that and getting into that. But who knows what it is next week.
And you have a Valentine's Day beer coming up, don't you?
Yes, we do. That's going to be really exciting. We've been on our minds this whole past few weeks about that one. So yes, for Valentine's Day, we have a special beer that's being released. It's our Belgian double milk chocolate stout that we brewed with mint, and it's quite definitely delicious. And we aged it on cocoa nibs and mint, and we're having an event out at the brewery. We're pairing up with people might know Blue Bonnet Cafe, which makes delicious pies, so they're going to have their pies out there. And their Amy's Ice Cream from Austin is making a special ice cream with our beer, and that's going to be out there. And we're going to do that from 12 to 5 on Valentine's Day, and our proceeds are going to
Camp Phoenix, which is a local nonprofit organization in Marble Falls that serves children and their families' mental health needs.
Oh, excellent.
It's a wonderful organization.
So this beer will only be available around Valentine's Day. Is that correct?
And then it's gone. Initially, so we're going to just have it and only available at the brewery initially. So we're going to probably have it only available at the brewery on draft, probably for a month or so, and then we'll start releasing it to the outside general public in bottles.
We have been so thankful for all the people we've encountered along the way so far in this incredible, fun journey that has had, of course, many challenges, but it's really been very confirming, the number of people and the variety of people we've met who've been so supportive and so welcoming. It's just made it a wonderful and rich experience for us.
Next, we go with Dr. Quinn Rathkamp on a tour of Save the World Brewery, something that she does every Friday and Saturday afternoon.
David mostly built it out himself. I helped him a little bit and so forth. We basically funded this ourselves, so when it came around to what was left of the tasting room, we're like, we're going to have to do it ourselves.
So the building itself, did you build this building?
Yes, dear Jerry. This was all just land. Very steeply sloped, what they called relatively unbuildable.
Yeah, I know.
So yes, we had it built by a construction company.
Now, why did you pick Marble Falls?
So David, his parents have had a lake house in this area since he was a child, and it's beautiful out here. Mm-hmm. So we've always talked about, wouldn't it be nice if we retired out here? So since this is our retirement dream job, why not put it where you want to retire? Hence Marble Falls. And you know, it's funny because I've always been a big town girl and never thought I'd be a small town girl, but here I am and loving it. So, yes.
Are you from Dallas originally?
No, not at all. I'm actually originally from Vietnam, but since moving to the States, I've lived in like Boston, New Orleans, Dallas, and I thought I was going to go work in D.C. actually as a physician, but ended up in Dallas actually, so...
And that's where you met David?
Yes, in New Orleans, in New Orleans.
Oh, you met in New Orleans. Were you doing what, residencies?
Yes, we were in residence together. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so come on this way, you guys. So again, that's just all the tasting room entry. And then I'm going to take you back to the brew house. Have y'all been on a brew house tour in the past? Mm-hmm. Okay, good. So remember that beer... is made up of four major ingredients. Mm-hmm. That's the malts, mm-hmm. Yeast, water, and hops, mm-hmm. essentially. And we really stick to those traditional ingredients, except for a few additions. Mm-hmm. So for example, our wit beer mm-hmm. is a traditional Belgian wheat ale that has orange peel and coriander in it. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. those are added in that. We actually have a beer that has been aging for a while, that we're going to release in Valentine's Day. That is a double milk chocolate stout aged over mint and cocoa nibs. Mm. Yeah, so we'll do some of those kind of things, but we don't use rice and corn or anything.
Okay.
So before a brew day, they will crush or mill the grains that they'll be using. So barley comes whole, mm-hmm. and it has to be crushed mm-hmm. in order for the sugars and everything to be more easily extractable. Mm-hmm. So that's why it goes through a mill which has rollers in there mm-hmm. that crushes them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's hard to actually see them. I'll show it to you actually in a small one.
Oh, okay.
And then it actually moves that crushed grain up this tube which has a cylindrical auger inside that's electrical. So it's like a conveyor belt that moves it up, you guys. Okay. And then it smells great in here, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
And so it'll move up there into that case, and that case is called the grist case. So it's called grist once the grain has been crushed, okay? And it stays there until the brew day, and on brew day, it's like making tea. Mm-hmm. You're going to put hot water, and you're going to steep it with that crushed grain. And what that temperature does is it activates enzymes that are in the grain that will break down the starches in the grain into simple sugars, because the yeast can only really utilize simple sugars in their metabolism. So based on known scientific data, they know what temperature to aim for and also how long. And so on Brew Day, this first vessel is called the Mashlotter Tun. That's where we introduce hot water, which is also called hot liquor, and the crushed grain into the Mashlotter Tun, and then we let it steep there for a while until we deem that we've extracted the amount of simple sugars that we were planning on. Once we've done that, you guys can honestly, then we'll drain that pretty sweet liquid now, and that's called wort, W-O-R-T, from there, and it's going to leave behind densely packed wet grain. We actually give our grain to a rancher in the area, and he feeds it to his cattle.
Sure.
We really try to reuse everything as much as we can. And you know what's really great about that, especially in Texas with the drought conditions, that grain is hydrated. You know, so it's not just dry grain. It actually has hydration for the cattle. Hey, guys.
And no alcoholic content?
Yeah, no alcoholic content at that point. This is our group here.
Hi,
this is
David?
My husband, David.
Yeah, I recognize your photograph.
All right. This Alex is Payson. Alex Payson. He's our
Hello,
chief safety
Alex.
Officer and lead brewer. And then, so you guys, this is Deirdre. And
Hi, Patricia.
Patricia. And Manny.
Hey, Manny.
Hi. Nice to meet you.
Okay, I'll let y'all get back to what you're doing. I'll
we're about to just start tasting beer.
Okay. Yeah, y'all start doing your tasting.
Work day.
That's all they do. So anyways, we'll drain out that sweet liquid, which is the wort, right? And leave behind the grains like we talked about. And then we'll shovel it all out, and then our rancher comes and picks it up, basically. But that wort gets transferred to the next vessel over there, which is the kettle. And in the kettle, we boil it. And it's very important that you boil the wort, because number one, you sterilize it because you don't want bacterial contamination.
Sure.
Number two, that's where you add your hops. And hops require at least a 60-minute boil to cause a chemical change in their oils that releases the bittering agent that hops is brought in for. You know, when you drink a good beer, you want what's called balance. And that's a balance between the bitterness that comes in beer, the maltiness and sweetness that comes from the grains, the influences of yeast, which oftentimes is floral, fruity, spicy, that kind of stuff. And so you really want that balance. And that's why you need to have the hops, actually, because it can balance that sweetness. Otherwise, you'd have a really sweet beer. And hops is actually also a preservative, too, which is very nice. So it'll boil in there for a little while, and then we move it over to the third vessel, which is the whirlpool, you guys. So in the whirlpool, it has this spinning action. What that allows it to do is it collects the solid matter into the middle, and it drops out of solution. We do not filter our beer here, you guys, because filtering can remove some flavors, and we like our flavors to stay in the beer. So that's one step towards clarifying the beer, is the whirlpool process. So then we get beer coming out of the whirlpool, and it's very hot at that point. It's really still close to boiling temperature. We're soon going to add the yeast to the wort and transfer it into one of these fermentation vessels. I'll show you in just a little bit. But if we were to add yeast to practically boiling wort, it would kill the yeast. So we have to rapidly cool that wort, right? Okay, so we do it through a heat exchanger here. So in the heat exchanger, there are multiple little plates, and it basically has countercurrent action. One direction is the very hot wort. The other direction is very cold water. So it allows that rapid heat exchange. And then there are plastic tubing, which is hung up somewhere right now, that will be connected from this heat exchanger to one of these tanks.
Okay.
And along the way, it's going to get oxygen, and it's going to get the yeast, too. Okay? And then it goes to one of the fermentation tanks here.
These are the fermentation tanks.
Exactly. These four tanks that have the cones at the bottom here, fermentation is the process by which yeast will utilize those sugars that we talked about and release carbon dioxide and alcohol. And that's what we want, right? Where it turns into beer. So in the tanks, so the only time we actually want to introduce oxygen to our beer making process is as we're moving it into the tanks, because yeast actually need the oxygen in order to multiply at first. And we want rapid multiplication of yeast so that they can really ferment the beer well, okay? When in the tanks, like I said, what they do is they're going to gobble up the sugars and they're going to spew out carbon dioxide and alcohol. We actually don't want to capture all that carbon dioxide at this point because it would probably explode the tank since mm-hmm. it's a contained vessel. So that's why we actually have these blow-off areas.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But we do want that alcohol. So that's why we want to give it its time mm-hmm. to fully ferment. And so what Dave and Alex do every day is they will do a lab analysis on the beer
mm-hmm.
To check pH and specific gravity.
Mm-hmm.
So specific gravity is a measure mm-hmm. of how many sugars basically is in a solution. And over time, if the yeast are utilizing that sugar, it's going to drop.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a target value of what we're expecting it to get to before we know that fermentation is done.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're looking for, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So once we've determined that fermentation looks like it's done, we're going to move it on. Excuse me, gentlemen.
So the time before fermentation is about how long? Weeks or days?
Before it completes? Oh, so the brewing process is one day.
Okay.
Uh-huh. The fermentation process in the tanks is roughly 2 weeks mm-hmm. for most of our everyday beers.
Right.
For our higher alcohol beers, can be a very long time. Yes. Like months. So when we think that we're done fermenting, we're going to move it into one of these two tanks, which are the bright beer tanks. So they're called bright beer tanks, you guys, because in these tanks, the beer is going to further clarify
mm-hmm.
By a couple of actions. The primary action is we actually add a fining agent. A fining agent is an agent that actually will collect the solid particles and then drop out of suspension. So well-known ones are like the fish bladder. We use a plant-based one. So that's what we do in the bright beer tanks.
You know, it's the fish bladder. Are you talking about actual bladders from fish?
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. They discovered that. Uh-huh. Back in the day. So anyway.
So you buy a bag of fish bladders? I mean.
Is it dried and desiccated? Or?
Well, yeah. So we use a plant-based one. But I imagine that the fish bladder variety is dry and desiccated and powdered.
Right.
It's, yeah.
Traditionally, it was from the sturgeon.
Yeah.
But nowadays, it's pretty much sturgeon.
I think they discovered it because some guy like carried his beer in a fish bladder, right?
Yeah,
way back in the day, exactly.
A good water container.
And then they
saw
that it just became clearer, when it was carried there. So this is actually where
it's red seaweed based for kettle coagulant.
And did you have a reason for picking that over the fish bladders?
Well, we live pretty close to Austin, so there's mm-hmm. a lot of vegan kind of thing. So the effectiveness is pretty similar. So a lot of people, they want vegan beer and stuff. So
of course. That's right. No fish bladder involved.
Yeah. No fish bladder.
No fish bladders were harmed in the making of this beer. Yeah.
So this is actually where we will also get our beer ready before we package our beers.
Mm-hmm.
We package our beers in two ways. One is primarily in bottles, actually. That's how we started. And then subsequently, only recently, we've also started kegs. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So we do what's called bottle conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
Bottle conditioning is, think of it as a secondary fermentation, mm-hmm. like champagne.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where we add new fresh yeast. Mm-hmm. In powder form, and little bit of sugar that the yeast is going to utilize to do a secondary fermentation that produces more carbon dioxide in the bottle. So it's a natural process by which you get carbon dioxide versus like carbon dioxide injected into the bottle, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when we do keg, however, we are going to use carbon dioxide to carbonate the beer before it goes into kegs. Otherwise, you'd have very cloudy beer coming out of the kegs. A lot of sediment from that.
Yeah.
So on bottling day, you guys, we will use this bottling dime.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. And we put the empty bottles on here. They travel on the conveyor belt and get a label slapped on them here. Then they travel further down the conveyor belt. And these two pieces will sandwich them, flip them over, and they'll get a quick rinse. And then they'll travel down here These fillers will fill them with beer, and then they'll travel to here where they get capped, and then to here where we'll put them in the cases to be packed into the next room. Exactly, just like those.
All I can imagine, it must have been an enormous financial outlay to start this.
It was, right. And it's funny because we had a lot of different interests from people we knew, et cetera, about investing, but we're like, well, you know, we're going to give all our profits away, so you're not going to get anything back for your investment unless you just want the investment of knowing that you're contributing to the world, you know. So no, Dave and I mean, we knew it was going to be just us, and we just thankfully were blessed to have saved this amount up over the years of practice and everything, and now we're poor as paupers, but you know.
So when you were practicing doctors, you had the intention of saving your money to buy this?
No, not at all. We originally just, you know, I mean, we never lived that high on the hog.
Right.
So we just, you know, we saved just like anybody else would, and, you know, for our future as well as just for whatever we, you know, might come up and so forth. But yeah, not with this intention until in the last 3 years. When Dave, you know, and I decided that we would take on this venture, he actually retired first, and he went to brewing school, and that's where he met Alex, actually. So they're both master brewers. And
where do you go to brewing school?
The America Brewers Guild, which is mostly an online, and then they will do a final, like, lab portion, and it was out in Sacramento at the time. Uh-huh. And then they do at least a month internship. So Dave did his internship at the Lost Abbey, if y'all are familiar with that, in San Diego.
Yeah.
Very good sour beers. Mm-hmm. And Alex did his internship at Mayflower. Yep, so that's where they did their schooling as well as internships. And then Dave helped out with some friends of ours who own a brewery up in Garland that's called Lakewood. So he did some more time in breweries before starting up our own. It takes a long time to plan out a brewery. I mean, you can purchase a whole system, you know, from a manufacturer that's going to be and have it installed, be like really, really big cost. We sort of piecemealed things, and these two installed it themselves. So they've really had to learn a lot, you know. We've all had to learn a lot. Like, I've had to learn bookkeeping and payroll and QuickBooks and all that kind of stuff. I've never had to do that kind of stuff. You know, and human resource type of things. Yes, no. not fun stuff by any means. So anyways, yeah, that's the story.
To hear more about Save the World Brewing Company in Marble Falls, you can go to the website www.savetheworldbrewing.com for more about the brewery and also where to buy Save the World beers. For Texas Public Radio, I'm Deirdre Saravia.